discuss more of your thoughts or concerns, and we'll just go from there. I'm not going to speak into what your thoughts or concerns are. I think they'll come out more after the presentation, and that's that. We want to remember, because I don't even know what everyone stands on who came here this evening, or if they have any thoughts before they got here. But certainly, we will all be completely respectful and treat each other appropriately through this whole process. Stand on. That's my only house rule. Okay? So thank you for coming out.
Just starting, you're right on time. Grab some food if you want it. There's 5 tables set up, so grab one. You'll get to be friendly with your neighbors because we are going to talk to each other. Thank you for being here. This is a tremendous turnout. As many of you know, we're very, very late in kind of the development of this ongoing debate. I am Phoebe Potter. I live in Westkill. I am here as a concerned member of the public. I grew up in Gilboa, and then I went to college, and then I did my master's in public policy at Georgetown, and I spent the last 8 years working with states and counties all over the country who are really, really struggling with the fact that we keep trying to, that counties and states keep finding themselves overburdened with the cost of their correction systems due to just a kind of relentless growth in the use of prison and jail detention and incarceration over, you know, the last 30, 40 years. And so I learned a lot. I worked for the Council of State Governments, Justice Center. It's a national, nonprofit, bipartisan, research-based organization that would come into counties like this, struggling with questions like this, and try to help them think about what to do. So when I moved back here, after leaving that job to get some peace and quiet at my internet-less, cell phone-less house in Westkill, I didn't do a very good job. I kind of found myself naturally sucked into the fact that this was a conversation happening right here locally. And the choice to build a jail is a huge one. It doesn't come up very often. The last time we built a jail in this county was 1908, I believe. So this is a really essential thing for folks to know about. Typically with a bond or financial burden of this caliber, a lot of times you're talking about public votes on issues like this. That isn't the case here. Everything is decided within the legislature. So it's been challenging to both get the information and then formulate an opinion and then share that information so other people can and then get voices heard. And so I just want to recognize that a lot of folks in this room have been doing different elements of that work in tandem with me. At times we have, shared common connections, whether that's through what we call the Green County Good Government Coalition that was started in Tannersville amongst business leaders concerned about the cost. Some folks are connected to Mountaintop Progressive, for instance. I honestly am just doing this because I think it's important, and I'm not really tied to any political party. Some people, the division in this is not splitting on Democrat-Republican lines. It's really a populist issue that is one that people are curious about. So my goal is to take 30 minutes at the most. I will go as fast as I can, but to really provide a backdrop of where this debate started from, how we got to this decision, why this bond, what's at stake, and some of the related statistics and information that I feel like are kind of represents a lot of the moving parts. I was lucky to be able to know a lot of this information because Lori Torgerson invited me to be a member of the Greene County Public Safety Commission's Alternatives to Incarceration Subcommittee that was myself, Crane Davis, and Greg Lubau were the only kind of members of the public, and then it was the head of probation, the district attorney, the public defender, retired judge and legislator. So it was a very, again, kind of, you know, official body of people who looked at a lot of these, a lot of the research comes from that work, and that was a year ago. So that's who I am. That's what I'm planning on doing. A lot of you may already know this, but I also think going through some of this background and how we got to now might be helpful grounding into what is the right political sort of set of decisions to make and I mean political in terms of like we are affecting politic, political decision making as a collective body. What is the best way to deal with the fact that we do have a pressing issue? The Greene County Jail is closed. We aren't currently doing we don't currently have a legal system of managing our jail population. Something needs to be done, but what needs to be done and how? That's what we're here to kind of discuss, and also hopefully get into some of the strategy around that as we come into the vote that is coming up next week amongst the legislators. So that's why I want to get that context. Then we can have an open Q&A for a little while, but then I'd really love to give time for folks to dive in and hone in to discussions at their table. We have, thanks again to a lot of the folks in the room who were present at the Public Safety Committee meeting last week, this vote had to go through multiple rounds of votes, just so you know what you're talking about here, in terms of this proposal. On September 5th, the Public Safety Committee passed the current proposal, which I'll talk about more. So the next decision-making happens with the Finance Committee on September 17th, and then on the 19th, the full legislature votes. And they have to have a supermajority to pass this bond. And that's an important political thing to think about, which I'll get to. But what's great is they added a public hearing from 6 to 7 p.m. because there was so much public outcry that there was a lot of research and questions that had not been answered. And so there was a consensus amongst the legislators that they would give a 6 to 7 p.m. for a public hearing. So part of why I broke out these tables into different topic areas is so that, again, as a collective body of folks, you know, if there are particular, we can kind of ask, use that hour wisely to kind of make sure we hit all the different questions or topics that maybe we're sitting with versus having, you know, the same thing come up six times, which the legislators keep dismissing us as you keep saying the same thing over and over again, and we've already heard this. And I personally feel like we've been heard maybe, but we certainly haven't been responded to. And that's why I'm here talking to all of you. So, okay, does that all sound good? Make sense? Any other questions? Okay, that was, y'all are so nice. So why do we need a new jail? Is anybody here not familiar with like the kind of core stuff around it? Does everyone have a little background? I'll move quick. But essentially, the State Commission on Corrections, that's what that acronym means, the State Commission on Corrections, they oversee jail operations at the county level and make sure that they meet certain standards. And they had been doing an ongoing investigation probably before 2010. That's what I've looked at in terms of documentation, where it was really ramping up into a combination of physical and a lot of procedural issues that were happening in the Greene County Jail. And in response to that, as early as 2010, they had started to shut down parts of our jail in response to that. So our capacity started at 60. 60 is the normal size of our old jail, down to 56 in 2010, and then it was reduced even further from 56 to 40 because of some structural issues with the building. Broken windows were cited, issues with ADA access were cited. But most of what you'll see that was being named by the commission about why they shut our jail down and ranked it the second worst jail in the entire state after Rikers Island.
Which is closed, right?
Which is closed. Was a lot of procedural concerns. The management of the jail by the sheriff's office. Now, the building certainly had a lot of issues, and I am sympathetic in particular for the correctional officers who have had to deal with working in a building that had a lot of structural issues. Certainly some of the reasons we're struggling with understaffing is because people don't want to work in that building, because as we started shutting down certain parts of the jail, more people had to be sent out to take inmates other places and weren't there to deal with the jail. So I don't want to put all of this was out of ill will, and what was happening is that for a long time, according to the State Commission on Corrections, the sheriff was not responding to a lot of these issues as they were coming up over that time period. And so all of a sudden, you kind of had this escalation in the last year and a half when a lot of this stuff was picked up saying, you'll really have to do something. And so here's like a list that came out in April 2018, a report was sent that listed some of the violations that we were seeing that led to the SCOC really coming down on the sheriff's office in the county. But practices around what we do with people's property when they show up, hygiene issues, clothing, the rule book was out of date, the healthcare issue, like kind of every single possible thing that you have to do to actually have a humane jail condition, basic standards of jail, were problematic under the kind of tenure of the sheriff's office. In response, the sheriff and with the county put out to Catterskill Associates a request for the facility to be reviewed, and they determined that it was unstable, that there was no way within the existing facility to address all the issues. I haven't dove into that entire thing, but basically it put it in the position where the commission said, fine, close it, and you need to board out all of your inmates until you figure out what you do next. And that determination officially came out in May 2018. So since May of 2018, what's been happening is our average for the last 2 years, about 42 people in the 42 to 45, that's the average daily number of people under the jail's kind of what they call their census, the amount of people they're dealing with. So right now, all those folks are being sent to other big jails that have empty space in our neighboring counties to sit and await determining what's going to happen next. That is not a long-term solution. It's not legal to do that long-term. So anybody who has in their mind, we can just keep doing what we're doing into perpetuity, no, that's not an option. And it creates a lot of issues for the staff who are driving now to Kingston to haul people back and forth for court cases, for the families and the people in jail who are trying to deal with their court cases. So there's a lot of reasons that we don't want to continue the boarding out practice, and we want to move quickly. So while all this has been happening, the county was kind of like, all right, what are we going to do? And the Public Safety Committee was looking very specifically at this issue for some time. Bill Lawrence is the chair of that committee and has been doing a lot of the work on determining what to do next. And this is an image of a report that was put out by Ricky Green Associates, which is a company that was contracted by Greene County to do some projections about what our population needs would be and what we should do as our next move. And it's usually the assumption, and especially in New York State, that if you need to replace your jail, you build another one and you build it bigger. That has been kind of the norm. But why? Why is that the case? I'm going to go back to this. All right. I want to put this up for context for folks who aren't so familiar with what's happening on kind of a macro scale around jail populations in the United States. These are people who are in jail, and this trend was kind of like the same going back. So this is in 1995. You've kind of like about a similar number of people in jail who are either awaiting conviction for a crime. That means they're not guilty, innocent until proved guilty, according to the Constitution. But they're waiting in their case in jail for reasons I'll get to. Or they're convicted of a crime that's a short sentence. If it's less than a year, you usually finish that in jail. Otherwise, you get sent to state prisons. Prisons are where you serve your sentences. Jails are where you await the determination of your sentence, if you're going to have one at all. And what you see here is a tremendous amount of growth. This is actual people in the United States that are sitting in jails not convicted of a crime, from about 250,000 in 1995 to 500,000. That's a huge amount of growth. There are not corresponding crime spikes to tie to this at all. And I really feel that much of this has been driven by a combination of what I consider to be unfunded state mandates, encouraging counties to build bigger, and an industry that's motivated to also sell bigger jails. So going back then, what we ended up with from Ricky Green was a suggestion to build a 67,000 square foot jail that doesn't include the sheriff's office part of it, with 126 beds, expandable to 148. 126 beds. There are 42 people on average in our jail census for the last 2 years. And that will cost, that original proposal, I believe it was about 50 million, I think it was 52, right? And then the same sort of thing that we're grappling with now. And we're talking about the largest capital investment we've ever made as a county. Because of, again, this opinion is biased because it's just my opinion, I guess, but I've been doing this work a long time and I see a trend that is pushing counties to build bigger. And there's an industry that stopped making money on prisons because people ran out of money, so they switched their attention to jails. And one of the things that the research shows is that oftentimes when you build bigger, you end up finding people to put in the thing you built. And that creates, from my perspective, an issue with civil rights in our county. Or you don't fill it, you kind of stay consistent, and then you're paying for empty bed cells. So I kind of see it as a bad outcome either way. This is looking at Ulster and Tompkins County, who recently built new jails. Ulster who built a new jail, and Tompkins that chose not to, went a different route with their issues. And you can see that there's a pretty steady, consistent level of jail incarceration in the county that went with keeping our capacity the same, doing business as we're used to, versus Ulster that builds, and then you see a spike, and now it's starting to level out a little bit, but still, you know, above where we are. So we just need to be aware that when we talk about a major investment in something like a jail, you're talking about a major investment in paying for more of the operations associated with running a jail and more of your people going to jail instead of maybe investing in things that help reduce crime and arrest rates in the first place. These data came out, most of the legislators, many of the legislators acknowledged that that was a kind of huge thing. I don't want to suggest the legislators were all like, yay, we got it worked out. And Bill Lawrence then created the Alternatives to Incarceration Subcommittee that Lori Torgerson really championed having happen, because she was one who really was looking at the numbers, somebody who's done a lot of this work at the state level in New York. So she chaired this committee, and you can see some of the folks who were on there. And we met from June of 2017 until September of 2017, every 2 weeks, to look at as much data as we could. I think I've already mentioned this, but jails are basically an expensive place to detain people between their arrest and their conviction. And it's generally only legal if you can prove that the person's a threat to public safety or at risk for failure to appear. It's meant to be a last case resort. Otherwise, you write a citation, you send a person home, you tell them to show up to court when they're supposed to show up, and then they get sentenced or not. And then maybe they go to jail. That's a different issue. The average cost in 2017, when our population was about 42 people, was $337 a day for each person who sits in jail. So when you say, I want you to spend the next 2 months in jail on a $1,000 bond or bail, and you can't pay it, and that's essentially why you're there, we're going to pay $337 every day for that person to sit there for those 2 months until somebody gets around to looking at their court case. Now, when the numbers go up, that number goes down, right? So if you have 60 people in your jail, that average might drop to 280, but it's a large number. And this just gives you a sense of where that number comes from, the base of the operating costs for running the jail, separate of construction entirely, every year. And a lot of it is personnel stuff, which makes sense. You need people to run these things. So this is really not conjecture. When you think about capital investments and what you can put into a county, jails tend to be a drain on public budgets, for what I was saying before. The more people that are in them, the more you got to pay to house, feed, and medicate them. And if they aren't full, you actually are legally required to staff your jail based on the total potential capacity, not how many people are there. So you're going to pay that $5.1 million every year no matter what. The reality, there's been some people who've heard that, oh, we can make money because we can board other people's inmates in. It's not going to happen. All these other jails tried that, and they already built their big jails. So they've got us ahead in the market, and there's just a huge glut of empty jail cells in our region. We could, in theory, be taking in federal inmates. I personally don't want federal immigration detainees in our jail. But also, if you don't care about the ethics of that alone, there's still a bias toward using jails that are closer to the border for those sorts of things. We're not going to be the first choice in line for federal inmates. They don't attract economic development. How many people, you know, businesses do you know say, well, what's the condition of your jail when they're asking about the utilities or the services in your county? It has been brought up that this project will extend a number of useful utility lines along 9W, so that has an added investment benefit. But from my perspective, that could be done with any construction project. It's not quite compelling enough to me, but form your own opinion. This is the anticipated tax impact as given by the legislature. There are many people here who have done a lot of research and feel like it's higher than this, but I'm going to give you the numbers that are straight from the legislature. An extra $1.8 million per year. That assumes there's no increase in operating costs. There's a 7% increase in the total tax levy then, and that comes out to $55.67 per household per year, which may not seem like a huge amount, but when you think about what we are losing opportunity cost-wise from all that money, I think it is a tremendous amount of money. The folks that we have in our jail are mostly pretrial. I think it's waivers between 65 and 75% are people who are in our jail awaiting conviction. We have mostly misdemeanor cases. whether that makes them a risk of flight, you know, or a risk of violence, it's more nuanced. Misdemeanor doesn't necessarily mean more violent or less violent than felony, so it's complicated, but there's a lot of people sitting in our jail because they violated their terms of probation, because they're behind on their child custody for the fifth time. These aren't things, in my view, that I want to pay $337 a day to lock them away because I think they're unsafe. I'd rather have them work it out in court and resolve the problem with a social worker and their family. In every jail I've studied all across the country, you have higher rates of people with mental illness, homelessness, and addiction, I think for obvious reasons. They're often kind of, the cops end up having to be the last resort to deal with folks, and the only tool they have oftentimes is jail. It'd be nice to give our cops more tools to work with. And a huge number of people are just sitting there because they can't pay bail. If a judge puts bail on, they're basically saying, we don't think that you're a flight risk or violent because if you pay bail, we'll let you out. So just something to think about in terms of the legality of this. And what we're anticipating in New York State, as has happened in many places across the country, is that there will be bail reform and it may be found illegal. And so you'd have a reduction in that anyway. So here's our numbers in terms of people. I mentioned the 42 number, and the most recent statistics for 2018 are that it's been level. Now, was it higher before? Yes, that's real. And a lot of people are saying, like, let's build for where we our most high number possible. I can hear that argument. I just want to explain some context about that first, which is what we saw over this time period, which arguably this number went down because there was less room in the jail, so people were like, let's try to avoid sending people there. It's kind of a chaos mess over there. What you had during that time is fairly stable, I would say, kind of crime arrest rates, not anything that was that noticeable difference, especially from 2010 on. However, the admissions to jail for crimes went down. So what that tells you is happening is that there are conscious decisions being made by your criminal justice system to do something different with people who are arrested than just send them to jail. And they probably made that choice because they knew the jail was shutting down and didn't have room. I spent a lot of time on the ATI committee working with the director of probation, Alan Frisby, and with the public defender's office, and with the district attorney, talking about how they were managing this issue over the last few years. And they basically were like, hey, within our existing resources, the staff we have, the policies and tools and practices that are disposable, we've been able to make decisions that have us reserving jail detention as a last resort. We can use pretrial supervision. You can have a probation officer checks in on somebody as an alternative to jail. That's a way a lot of places do pretrial detention or pretrial safety. We're trying to move faster through administering justice, actually getting people through their court cases, so we reduce how long somebody sits in jail. This is me using jargon, but the length of stay somebody sits, the length of time somebody stays in jail drives your numbers up, right? As much as the number of people do. And so there's a lot you can do to reduce that length of time. We've been using more treatment and community-based alternatives in our county. And then on top of that, the state reformed, had some reforms come out, so now there are no youth allowed to be in adult jails. Grateful. What we're anticipating, we'll see what happens, politics are complicated, but, you know, a big movement towards the end of bail practice and speedy trial reform. And that's been pushed actually by the Close Rikers campaign people, who are saying we want to close the jail, and the best way to sustain a smaller jail is by having speedy trial. People actually get through their cases faster, which everyone should want. It's just the way justice should be administered. And the other thing to consider is that our general population, in particular young people, has been declining in Greene County. And that's your riskiest population, typically, is young men, is who ends up in jail the most.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
What percent of the people in jail are there for drug offenses?
I have those numbers here, at least a snapshot from recently, and I believe it was like 24%, and I have breakdowns of those. I can find that for you if you want, and other folks. I cleaned out my papers today. This is literally a quarter of what I've collected in facts about this jail debate. But it's a significant number. 20, you know, a quarter of your people for a particular funds type is substantial. Oh, here it is. 23%. This is from 2016. I don't have the more recent numbers. That's what we had most recent when I did this research last year. 23%, which includes DWI, is about half of that.
But people could be like robbing a bank, to get money to buy drugs, and they're not going to be cited as having a drug offense.
Yes.
So like those numbers,
exactly,
it's much higher than that.
It's important to like break down and look at the individual cases if you really want to get a sense of like, can they be in the community or not? It doesn't break down that simply with offense types, and this does have breakdowns by within those categories of what the specific crimes are, which anybody's welcome to see. I can pass that around.
Well, yeah. I guess the follow-up question is, if the population, if close to a quarter of the population is for drug offenses, how much is coming from Greene County to try and place people into programs instead of into prisons and jails?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm going to keep flowing because I'll touch on that a little bit more. There is a drug court program that's operating in Greene County. It's a rather intensive program. There's a lot of resources in that, but you had a specific judge who works with you. You can get your case disposed of in a particular way if you follow through on treatment. So there is some of that happening. You don't have a ton of high numbers, although considering we only have 42 people in our jail, I would say, 17 people going through that is a big percentage. So there are some things happening. I'm going to keep moving, but Laura, you had your hand up. Did something you want?
I don't want
to. Okay. I'm going to keep moving because there will be, I'm sure, lots of questions, and I want to just get through. So, there's a ton of value that we have from preventing jail time for folks, again, who don't need it. In particular, and this gets lost on people sometimes, is the idea that like jail corrects people. Research shows that actually the less time you have in jail, and this is controlling for risk and offense type and some of the things that might drive this, is you tend to have lower recidivism rates. And a lot of times what happens when somebody's sitting in jail is there's these added costs that build up. You're sitting in jail for 2 weeks, so you lose your job. You lose your job, so you and your, boyfriend can't afford rent anymore. So now they're out of rent. And then you fall behind in something else, and you're probably going to come back a little bit more stressed out and desperate than you were when you went in. And so you see crime rates actually don't necessarily get improved when somebody is disconnected from the community. Long story short, this is a bunch of the things the ATI committee looked at, and our recommendation was that we need to build or share for what we need. And we thought, based on the numbers, that an opening capacity of 66 beds that could be expanded to 78 would more than cover, what we were looking at in terms of our needs. And that also accounted for the fact that you need different types of pods to accommodate different populations. It's not just 42 people, 42 beds. It's a little more complicated than that. So we accounted for the fact that people have to be housed differently. Or our other suggestion was look at sharing a jail. The estimates that we received and looking, because a lot of work was done by the legislature and other folks to talk to Columbia County about this. This is not just something we made up and was out there. Columbia County was very actively engaged in a number of ongoing conversations about what that would look like. It's very unique that we could do this here. Hudson is as far away from Catskill as Coxsackie is. Yes, I know it's out of the county. We should debate about what it means to take our capital investment out of the county. It's an important debate. But the reality is that you're talking about a facility that has the capacity to expand to meet our needs very close by, which is a unique situation to be in. And there's no desire on anybody's behalf for any correction staff positions not to either be preserved or reassigned if they want that. And unlike losing a hospital or community college, which I know a lot of people are upset about, you don't generate revenue from a jail. You just spend money on it. The comparisons of those capital investments, losing those things are not, it's kind of apples to oranges in my mind. And so what we could, achieve if we shared a jail ultimately is up to $2 million every year, which means we could have all our correction staff and, if you really are worried about jobs, invest in, the math shakes out to 41 new full-time living wage jobs in this county, which I think we all know we could use more of. Or keep your taxes lower and see if that creates the incentive to generate private sector jobs because businesses are paying less. Either way you look at it, if your concern is jobs, I feel that building a giant jail actually takes away a lot of resources for doing that. And another thing to consider is that, a big part of why our jail was shut down is because we had a hard time hiring. This is from, again, the State Correctional Officer, State Commission on Corrections report, is that we had a hard time retiring or retaining correctional workers because they would often leave and work for the state for more money. That's not going to change with this new proposal. So, you know, I think we need to consider also what the, you know, what's going to happen around construction jobs. There is a table out there somewhere, a discussion group that's specifically on jobs. So I won't dive into this in the interest of time. So anyway, all of this happens. The ATK committee looks at all this information. And then a year later, it's this summer. And I know there's a lot more happening behind the scenes than I know about. Again, I'm not in all the conversations. I don't take context. Nobody does. But a year later, we get a new proposal for 98 beds, $51. And I'm like, okay, that's closer. Still really expensive. And it makes you wonder, too, about, like, you know, what's happening in the shift about our estimates about these construction costs of, like, why we're not seeing really significant reductions in the overall cost. We still don't really have clear information about the increase in the operating expenses that will incur, even though we've been told that there'll be no meaningful increase in the number of corrections officers from building this jail. That's from Administrator Grodin. And so the Public Safety Committee passes this again. It goes back to the Finance Committee, and Larry Gardner is one of a few people on that committee who say, let's delay this vote. There's still a lot of issues here. We clearly didn't resolve all the things. And then the next month, there's a proposal on the table, a lot of work went into to come up with something with Columbia County and with the state. The state was involved in this determination that we should look at a shared jail. And it would have cost our county $5,000 out of pocket. The rest of the cost for the study, which is $60,000 total, were covered by the state and Columbia County, was voted down. So here we are, September 17th and 19th, the next round of votes. Here's the proposal we're now with, 96 beds for $47 million. That will be paid for with a $39 million loan and $8 million in cash reserves. That's where we get our $70 million total expense number you may have been hearing. And there are some other factors to consider that, you know, we haven't done. There's things that are unknown about this proposal. There are a lot of folks who are working behind the scenes right now to try to further negotiate down to what I've heard is at best maybe we get an 80-bed jail. And one of the things those folks are feeling due to correspondence that is from one person at the State Correction on Commission, the same Commission on Corrections that had signed off on doing the shared jail study and offered the governor's staff, who runs that commission, offered to pay for, same office is giving correspondence saying, if you drop below 96 beds, you might get into trouble with growth. And this is where I go back to that unfunded state mandate thing, because I know that correspondence happened. I talked with folks at the Vera Institute who do a lot of work at the state level about whether or not the State Commission of Corrections can legally tell a county what size their jail needs to be. And the answer was no. They can tell you what your basic minimum numbers are to meet standards of humanity, living things, but they should not be telling you what to project or what your total jail pop, because it is decided by our policies, our practices, as a people in Greene County, deciding how we deal with the people who get arrested here. So there are folks who feel like the writing's on the wall with the State Commission of Corrections because, you know, one person said, I don't suggest that you drop below that number, 96 beds, even though I cannot speak on behalf of the commissioners who make the decision. But at the same time, we had the person in the governor's office who runs the entire state, oversees the entire state commissions of corrections, work very closely with us to look at a shared jail. So that's not adding up for me that we have a very clear mandate from the state one way or the other. And regardless, I don't think we should coattail to a state unfunded mandate. We're on the mountaintop. I just want to mention our folks who are involved in this. Lori Torgerson, who's here, so you can talk to her directly about things, has been a real champion of using data to look at these numbers and think about what makes the most sense. Spearhead of the ATI committee has been very consistently against passing this bond until a lot of these questions get better answered. Larry Gardner, who represents this area, was one of the people who encouraged the delay of the proposal by the Finance Committee and voted in favor of the shared jail feasibility. So I feel like, you know, the mountaintop is, you know, our representatives are concerned about these issues too. I just talked about that. I'll skip that. And so that's kind of where we're at. And the final consideration, a couple more considerations for us that I think are important to know is, you know, where this has gotten us in terms of, like, the cost per bed to build is extraordinarily high compared to what it would cost to expand Hudson by 40 beds, which is how we would manage a shared jail, or jails in other places. Herkimer County has been one that folks have mentioned, like significantly lower. So again, it's like, all right, even if we need a new jail, there seems to be a lot of issues with that proposal. There's a lot of permits that have not been completed. Mary, do you want to raise your hand? Has done a lot of research on the environmental, where this is located, some of the environmental issues. If you're curious about that in particular, she's a great person to talk to. And you know, we've gotten the message that we can negotiate the specifics of the proposal once this loan passes. And there's a lot of folks who are saying, let's just lock it in. It's a good interest rate, 3.5%, and then we'll figure all this out after that. But I'm not convinced that once we lose a supermajority, which gives our mountaintop representatives a much more powerful voice, that we're going to really have the momentum to keep this at a reasonable size. There's a lot of folks who want to just move ahead with a pretty large build. So that's it. Would you vote yes? That's my question to you, and also how do we then relay that information to the legislators? And these five questions correspond to the five discussions table topics. So I'm hoping that we actually might be able to spend some time thinking about the questions and things that we have, so that we can clarify some of the questions or the concerns we want to raise at the public hearing next week. So that's part of why I kind of did this topical thing. We have a strategic question, how do we use that hour wisely, that a lot of folks have been thinking about. We want it to be open, of course, but also, you know, make the most of our time. So that's something for us to consider as a group. And yeah, I'll stop there and open up to Q&A. And I just want to offer that your questions don't have to come to me. If there's other folks in the room that you want to get your questions answered from, by all means, I'm just one of many people who've been involved in this. So thank you.
Yeah. One question, but a thank you to you and Lori and the committee who spent so much time and effort and energy guiding us in this manner. We are immensely grateful. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Maybe I just want to bring up two issues.
Yes.
This is a question, okay? There's two things that I feel are not inaccurate, but perhaps could have been presented in a different way.
Always.
All right. One of them is, you know, we think it's reduced by the amount of the reserves, but the reserves will have to be replaced. Correct?
I'm not the finance person in the room.
I don't know,
so
that's on my list.
What does that mean? Okay.
Yeah. What was relayed to me at a meeting with Groden on Monday was that the reserves was a line item from 2 years ago that they put in as if the jail was started, and that was the interest payment on the bond that they were going to use. So what was told to me that he was taking that appropriation, didn't spend it in a year that they did not get the loan. We were coming to the end of the second year that they didn't get the loan, and that $4.2 million would have been the start of that $8 million that's articulated there, because it's already in the budget. We've already paid it through our taxes as a line item as appropriation.
So the bottom line is maybe it doesn't have to be replaced.
I'm sorry?
So the bottom line is perhaps that reserve does not have to be replaced.
Right, it would be that line item with the final bond payment would be plus the interest, but it's already existed for two fiscal years. So that it's really not a reserve. It's a reserve that came because they didn't have an expenditure.
It's already related
in
to
that fiscal year.
Right. Okay, my second question is, and I've had conversations with other people about this. When you say it's $55.67 per household, I understand that that's it, and I understand that it's simplistic, but you have to look at your property taxes.
Yeah.
Okay, it's not 55.67% per household. It's about your property taxes, and we've calculated ours, and we have a very modest home on 12 acres. Okay, and ours will go up 200. So you really have to look at your what it means to you, not the $55.67.
Okay, I like to talk to that point also. We don't know how much it's going to cost. We just know the minimum amount that it's going to cost. We don't know what the operating costs are going to be. There hasn't really been
right.
A spreadsheet presented, not even a spreadsheet or an audit statement. Another way to look at it is $50 million with the minimum cost, with interest, it's $80 million. There's 47,000 people in this county, roughly. So it's around $1,500 to $2,000 per capita, not $54 per household.
Yeah, I would love for the...
a much more powerful way, and minimum quadrupling a day.
Right.
Without doing due diligence.
Yes.
So that's at least a...
I would love for whoever's sitting at the Can We Afford This table to, when we do our breakout groups, to make sure, write these questions down, write down what we want to make. You frame these points, assuming they're factual, and what questions we want to raise. So that's the goal of those breakout groups. And I think that table will have important questions to parse out because the finances are complicated. Yeah.
I just have a quick question. So when it says, would you vote yes, what's the question?
Would you vote yes if you were a legislator presented with this bond tied to this proposal? So 96-bed proposal
to do a
$47 million,
okay,
currently on the table with a 3.5% interest rate. Would you vote yes right now, or would you vote no so that we can continue having this conversation as a community?
The conversation about a shared jail?
Or a different build. Or a different build, or literally something, or something else we haven't even thought of yet.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Not limited to the shared jail at all.
I'm wondering about the moving the younger people out. I had a conversation with Bobby a little while ago, and he said that they account for a third, across New York State, they account for a third of the people in jail, people who are under 18. So if this is going to happen in January, and even if we have 45 people a night, that's going to bring it down to 30 people.
Yeah, I don't think the numbers look quite, that makes sense to me on a statewide route. I don't know that ours are quite that high.
Okay.
Lori, do you know the those numbers closely? I might be able to find them and dig them out. But it's certainly a trend saying fewer people. There's definitely fewer people in our jail as a result of that shift. Anybody know more about that than me?
We projected it up to 30%, but it's statewide, it's about 10%, and actually 16-year-olds as of October the 1st of this year can no longer be housed. And then it's October the 1st of 2019 that 17-year-olds can't be housed in the jail. So that we know that that's going to at least cut the number down by anywhere from 1 to 5, let's say. But I just wanted to make a very quick point. We are $13 million in debt on the books. In addition to that, there's $160 million in personnel costs that we're going to be responsible for. That has to do with retirement benefits and health benefits. So when you look at that number, they're actually taking $8 million to go to that number. Also, if you go through the budget, from 2015, mm-hmm. You look at the amount of money was dedicated toward the jail and the amount that was spent, they don't add up. And I don't know where that money's gone, for example. Each year they keep increasing the amount that they're dedicating towards the jail, and yet they only spent 3.5 million, but they dedicated 5. Now there may be some real evidence as to where that comes from, but we just don't know that, and that's a good question for us to ask.
Because my goal is to be data-driven, and I have data about the age of people in our jail, this is from all the bookings in our jail from 2004 to 2016. It was a very low number of folks who were in the age range of 16 to 20, about 1%. Looking at that, I don't think we're going to have a huge impact from that reform, but it's certainly going to be fewer people.
I think that from what we've been told is that we've already spent over $2 million in design costs, and currently it's running around $100,000 a month in redesign costs, which is a little concerning.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody would argue that time is not of the essence in terms of money being drained, staff going crazy, inmates being tortured, going back and forth. That's not a question in my mind. I also feel like this is the one moment we have to make a decision as a county that's going to tie up our resources for 30 years. And as a county wants to start businesses in Greene County, I care very much about that. So I hate the idea of saying because we're leaking out money or because we spent money on looking at one thing, we're refusing to look at any other options. That's an opinion. But you only confront this sort of decision, which affects your long-term operating costs, your capital investments, your debt for a long time, once a lifetime, really, in terms of a political calculation. So,
Phoebe, I have a strategic question. So on the 19th of August, if somebody in the room can describe to me what a supermajority is in the legislature, and number one, and number two, have we identified who the vulnerable legislators
yes.
are?
Yes.
Seems like that's a conversation.
Well, who are they?
Yeah, who wants to share that information? Who's real on it?
Well, I would just go into what was described to me, and I don't have the exact number, but maybe Laura.
Well, I can speak to the supermajority.
Yeah.
So there are weighted votes on the legislature, and it has to be an example that I represent four towns, while the town of Catskill has four legislators, so there's a weighting, and I don't know, this debates my tenure, how that calculation was arrived at. However, the total of the weighted votes is 10,000, and the supermajority is 6,750. As it stands, and as I understand it, I'd have to figure out all the mathematical combinations, but there are 14. If five vote no, I believe any combination of five, but I'm not completely sure about that, there would not be a supermajority.
So do we...
And that's... I can make that available to folks should they be interested in whose votes are what, but I think that, you know, rather than getting in the weeds, five legislators voting no.
And how many no votes do you have secure at this point?
My understanding is four.
So we need one more legislator to swing, and as far as we focus on Larry Gardner because of his history so far, being rather pragmatic in all of this, I think he's feeling this sense that it's inevitable we have to build a jail. And so let's just pass this bond and get it done with, and I'm gonna do everything in my power once the supermajority passes this bond to make it a reasonable proposal. I appreciate his intentions. I don't know that I really want to give up our negotiating power on that. And so to me, that's kind of the calculation and the thing to raise with Larry.
So Larry Gardner is not one of the four?
Correct. Five of us have not wanted to bond construction of a new jail. Those five people consistently throughout this entire 3-year process have been myself, Aidan O'Connor, who represents Durham, represents Catskill, Kevin Lennon, who represents Catskill, and Matt Luber, who represents Catskill. And so there has been an inability to attain a supermajority to date. Matt Luvera, I'm not sure what his current position is in light of the fact that the bond amount has changed. But Larry has not been publicly, at least, in the legislative meetings, vocal about this at all. So I think that's a fair assessment.
I'm just wondering if we have an accurate vote count assessment, and if maybe we just tip O'Neill this, where if we need five and there's Larry Gardner and one or two others, maybe a lot of effort in the next week needs to be spent to see what we can do to persuade them.
Yes, that's it.
That's as important as anything.
It's very important, and from building up public interest because we want people to know what's going on and to have a chance to form their opinion. But now we're kind of at that place of negotiating with these few folks who are wavering about this, Matt Luvera and Larry Gardner in particular, we've been focused on. And understanding why they're wavering is important, listening and hearing their perspective about it. I do think, that and then being able to be responsive to that. So, Leah, finish your thoughts.
So if you were wavering on a vote or were making how would we approach these folks in a week to do that?
Robert suggests chocolate. You know, I'll just say that I often feel very different than my colleagues, and so I'm not convinced that the things that would motivate me are necessarily those that would motivate others. I want to hear from people, and I want to think about data, and I want to analyze as much information as I possibly can, and so those are the things that have sort of driven my decision throughout all this. I think part of that is really a question about, you know, Larry and Matt's specific, you know, the things that matter to them most and their personality styles, and so I think it might be
maybe there needs to be you know, some folks assigned to those legislators to see what it is that might work, you know, legally.
Yeah, I mean, there are folks who've been having conversations with those people who can kind of doing some of that, but I also think this is galvanizing the opportunity. I also, you know, when we do the breakouts, I have some things and materials and things that we can each be using to contact our legislators and message it, but I think what's important is to be able to convince those folks that the political landscape is such that a no vote doesn't mean you're just, but I think a lot of people feel like the writing's on the wall. We have to build a jail that's close to 96 beds. Let's just get it over with and get this bond locked in. And I think we need to say, no, we're willing to show up and do the work and collaborate with you to figure out what's best for our county. It's kind of where I'm at. But we can't do that if we give away our power on the 19th. It's been a minute.
The 19th.
Yes.
I am very guarded specifically. The 19th is Yom Kippur. And the legislation will meet. And if you are not present, it is a no vote.
Yes.
I specifically asked Larry Gardner when he left Chul. No, I'm being very serious. Was he going to that meeting? And he said yes, he would go to the meeting. He didn't say if he was going for a yes or a no. Mm-hmm. But I found it very interesting. I mean, I'm not a good personal friend of his or anything. He would, on the holiest day of the year, say, I'm going to the meeting.
Go ahead, yeah.
Why did the ATI committee come up with such a high bed number?
The 66 number?
Oh, I thought it was higher.
96.
You said 96.
ATI proposed 66. Which can be expanded to 78 if you have to double bunk and there's some crisis and a bunch of people show up all of a sudden. But 66 was our number.
It's kind of high, right?
66?
It has to break people out.
Exactly. That's where we got.
That's all right.
And, okay. You know, whatever.
Yeah, I can pull that.
One gentleman on the end over there.
I'm new to the area, but this is like a microcosm of what's been happening. Like, I think everyone's skirting the issue of, I mean, this is very important, but no one's talking about what's happening is since 9/11, the federal government took the playbook from Halliburton. Down to a local level, they're taking all our money. You think they're going to build this fantastic thing that's going to be a ceiling fan. You know, and this came to me when I found this out in college from a colonel in the military in Iraq. This wasn't someone who, this isn't like fake news, he was my teacher. And, you know, since then I've been watching this unfold and I feel like everyone's kind of skirting around that. And maybe if we show that we actually know the truth and we don't skirt around that. You know, I was in prison in Spain when I overstayed my thing because I got kicked out of England and they sent me back. And in England I was there for 12 hours. Subhuman. In Spain they're like, what's the problem? Okay, they put me in a jail cell, which definitely didn't cost for one room more than $5,000. It was on a cot, and they gave me a mat, and I was there for 2 hours. They hired me a lawyer and a translator, and they gave me papers that just said, don't go to any other countries. And when you leave, I left, I shook the guy's hand, and he was like, cool.
2 hours.
You know,
that's what they're
doing. I'm not saying we can get there, but I don't know what's going on, but I think that needs to be aware of, is that they're stealing your money.
Just real quick, just to go back to this. We have to operate within variables of four in terms of bed size. So we're going to reduce it, you got to cut it down by chunks of four, just mathematically. And you are required, there's certain requirements around some of these numbers. Now, in theory, these two numbers could go down. You know, like, there's no reason they couldn't if we were like, let's push to be a jail that doesn't incarcerate more than 40 people at a time. You know, I'd be happy to go more radical in like a smaller jail. I think this was kind of that was the consensus we got when you had probation, the district attorney, the public defender, members of the public, and a judge together, 66. So I think it's a pretty pragmatic place. That hand there, and then I'll go there.
I think it's really important to well, we only have that 1 hour, right? So I don't know, is somebody organizing that?
Well, that's part of what this meeting is about.
Yeah. And the other thing is, in all the meetings I've gone to, there's such a lack of transparency. I mean, I have seen the legislators begging for figures, and they don't get them.
Yeah.
I mean, if we had those figures, you know, some interest in one or two of them to change the vote, it's just impossible. You know, to sit there.
And who are they asking
I guess Lawrence.
Yeah,
the committee is. That's supposed to have numbers.
Yeah.
Okay, I've watched Kevin Lennon. At times I want to cry for him because he's begging for these numbers and he never gets them.
Yeah.
So, you know, where are they? This should be public knowledge.
I agree. Yeah,
The jail is now closed.
Yes.
What was the size of the jail? How many people?
It was originally built for 60.
Okay. So if that jail were still extant,
yes,
if that were still functioning, the population would be the same 42, 41, whatever. What is the number that you gave?
Yeah.
Something 40, in the low 40s, right? Okay.
42 was the average 2017. It looks about the same this year. It's been there now.
So if that, the population what it is.
Right.
And the size would be what it was. Mm-hmm. And there wouldn't be a question of needing a bigger jail.
Correct.
So
no one would be like, if Catskill was there as it was, and we'd be like, we need to pay for an expansion.
So that should be the, you know, the starting point.
Yes.
Right.
Of any discussion about size of the jail.
Yeah.
Now, people who are saying, well, let's just lock this in, 39 million, and then we can negotiate about the size of the jail. The point is that we've already locked in we're already obligated to $39 million if we do that.
Once we vote yes.
You can build
if
a three-bed
yes,
jail or a 96-bed jail. We're still going to be paying for that $39 million loan for the next 30 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, excuse me, Rhodes said that wasn't a reality.
That's true.
Great, please clarify.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I met with them Monday and asked them specifically, if they pass this, are you locked into $39 million? He said no. If the design changes, and then following that, $2 million or $30 million or whatever the size of jail came in, that they would only borrow to the extent of what the final bid opening was. So
that might be theoretical, but if what they really want is a 96-bed jail, they're going to make it work that way.
But I just wanted
okay,
to make sure.
Okay, but thank you for that.
So it's a common practice when you do this, when you go to bond. When I did capital improvements in the village of Tannersville, you go to bond, and those are, you know, lawyer, and they have certain language. Then you do the project, you go out to bid, you do the project. If the project comes in under the bid, then that's it. You didn't use all the money. The loan that you find, the bond payment is based on what you expended. So
that's really helpful.
I assume that it was exactly parallel with monies that we took in the village of Tannersville, the way his process was. So I believe it to be true. Whether the legislators or the powers to be are going to push to spend that whole $39 million, you may be correct, but it does not. I just,
okay, thank you.
For the audience, just want to say they're not locked.
Yeah.
Laura, do you have a
point? I believe that I've been told that as well. I think there's a track record, particularly around the building of this size capital project of overruns as opposed to bids coming in under the anticipated budget. And I just want to make the point, because I think it's really important, because we have looked at historically, okay, if we decrease the beds, if we build and we decrease the beds by X number, whatever that is, the amount of savings is really, unfortunately, very, very negligible. The cost is in the construction of the facility. It's the analogy of building a house with whatever, five bedrooms or three bedrooms. But the other piece, and I think, you know, we're talked over here about operational costs, we do not, we are, if we look at not building, we have the ability to save operational costs. And that's the only way that will happen. The operational costs, we have not been able to effectively get information that's a true estimate. Even the best estimates we're getting are significant increases. And when you look at, as an example, St. Lawrence, a group of legislators traveled up to the St. Lawrence jail, St. Lawrence County Jail, because it has a footprint and a design that is similar to that which we are proposing building. And it's called direct supervision jail, getting into the weeds on all of this, but theoretically the ratio of staff to inmates staff to inmates is less, right? So fewer staff needed for more inmates. However, based on the footprint of the St. Lawrence jail, they have 160 beds and 80 staff. If we're to use that proportion, which is the best estimate, because we have asked and asked and asked for the staffing estimate and don't get one, if we use that analogy, we're talking about potentially a doubling of our staff in a facility at the size proposed. That's the best we can do. It's a guess, because unfortunately, right, we're not able to get that information, and that is the pivotal information, because not only are we talking about capital expense, we're talking about, you know, an ongoing,
right,
big chunk of our operation.
Just for folks to remember, doubling means going from about $5.1 million now to, if your staff, probably $9 million every
Laura,
year.
Laura, you're asking the same people. Who are you asking?
So part of the challenge in this, I have asked our public safety chair, we've asked our county administrator. Part of the challenge, I really do believe, is that the staffing decisions are mandated actually by the state. And until there is an absolute design and an absolute floor plan and the nuances of what this facility will exactly be, one small piece. I think we could do our due diligence by looking at other jails across the state and coming up with our best guesses and our best estimates. I have reached out to the State Commission of Corrections, actually to the governor's person who oversees that, and asked for those numbers, and he directed the state to get back to me. I haven't got an answer back directly on that. So I think part of it is because they actually really don't know, which is kind of my thought. But nonetheless, that leaves us as legislators and as a county to do the very best we can in figuring out what that is. And there are other direct supervision jails across the state and across the country, and we haven't gotten information from our leaders in terms of.
Phoebe, I want to point out one quick thing about the spikes in the numbers. And since we're on the mountaintop and you have such great festivals, if you correlate the number of
mountain jams,
but everybody's having a really good time at the Country Music Festival, those increases there correlate with some of those points. So, but really, they've changed their policy, and so they're not actually booking people in Catskill anymore.
So I'm going to suggest that we transition. It's 6:37.
Excuse me, I've had my hand raised, and I'd like to say something.
Yes.
You know, I think this is wonderful that we're all here together, that we have all these facts and figures and numbers to back up what we think is the right thing to do. I was at that meeting last Wednesday, and they didn't want to listen to anybody. The people in that room pretty much had their minds made up about what they wanted to do. And that's the reality. That is the reality. So we don't have much of a chance to stop this unless we talk to the people or the one person, you know, who is going to make this decision. If this hinges on one vote, and we're not, if every person in this room does not leave this room without writing
because that's who they have to listen to, you know, and that person happens to be the legislator for this town, and he's not even here, so I don't
think he was invited.
Yeah, exactly. So he has to know how we feel and how many, how strongly people feel about it. All the facts and the figures, you know, that are wonderful aren't going to matter Wednesday night when they come down to a vote if we can't get that fifth vote.
That's the perfect segue into where I wanted us to go, which is shifting. And, you know, at each of the tables, there are a one-page summary of some of the issues that we talked about here that has on the back of it, hopefully, yes, a contact list for the legislators. Oh, I wasn't done. Let's not be done yet with group discussion. Yeah.
I wasn't sending people home. They were reading their thing. I want to make sure they're awake, so I put the lights
on. Context for us. Hey folks, what's that? We're getting a little more political context, which I think is helpful because that's kind of what comes next.
So we're going to probably face this on Monday night, and Rusty's going to us, maybe thinking, because you've made such a good presentation that we solved this problem, we haven't yet.
Oh, yeah.
I think that how the legislatures have been addressed has been insulting at times, totally disrespectful. And even if you don't like that person in the office, you have to show some respect for the office. And, you know, you've been our own worst enemy in some cases. So we have to make sure that we are unified in a manner in which we are going to professionally and respectfully approach this. And it is, right, it is kind of a last-ditch effort. But we need to make sure that our conduct reflects our integrity and the virtue of our purpose here. And if there's other people who do not feel that way and show up and start expressing themselves in what I might call an inappropriate manner, what are we going to do or not do? I mean, I don't want to censor anybody, but how do we have guidance and yet without undermining what our common goal is?
Right. Yeah, it's a great point, you know, this is how we do this. So what I'm hoping can happen as we kind of focus and discussing on your table is a sheet of contact, so make sure you have that so you can do on your own, write, email, or call that person. But there is also a one-page handout in green, a kind of discussion sheet. And in that has a list of things to think about that we want to raise to our legislators and a list of things that each person can do. I'm curious, as you talk, one or two people maybe emerge in your topic of interest who are interested in being one of the people who speak at the public hearing, who feel like they can hold that sort of presence and, you know the issues. So, again, it's not meant to censor, but we only have so many people who can speak and people want. So we can start to do some of that. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, you don't get a lot done. There's a lot of nuance here. A lot of people have done a lot of, from the legislator's perspective, they've worked their asses off for years and years and years trying to do this. I just think they've been very narrowly focused and they've ignored a lot of other stuff, and that's unacceptable. Yeah, I love that. I would love to not say a word at that meeting. So I organized the tables into the specific issue areas that I raised in the presentation that come up in this conversation. Can we afford this? Is it the right size? Why do we need to double our incarceration rate? Have we actually looked at alternatives sufficiently? What are we talking about when we talk about jobs impact from voting this decision? And do not this deal that says, yeah, we can navigate afterwards. Like, do not say yes now to this proposal to the kind of political contribution. I hope that kind of resonates with some of the issues we might want to raise. Bring them up by all means.
I just have one last question.
Yeah.
For that point, if the state commission is it still a possibility for that feasibility study, or is that door closed?
I do not see that door opening again if this passes.
So no, yeah, if this passes, but if it doesn't pass, is it safe to say that there is that door is still open?
Yes.
With the person that supposedly said yes to a feasibility study, and then is writing the same letter saying Bill 96 sells.
Right,
which
exactly.
Is certainly
in touch with the state folks. They're a little distracted by election politics right now, to be perfectly honest, but that'll shift. But I think that what's important about that question is a shared jail can absolutely be reintroduced, and I think this is where public pressure can have a huge impact. And we'll have to redesign the proposal, which is annoying because a lot of people do a lot of work to reintroduce it, which is annoying, but we can do that, it's possible. So yeah, I would say that
once the supermajority votes yes, though, it's over. They're just looking at it. Sure,
all right, so if folks can like collectively look at that green piece of paper, ask your question, look at the things on the back that it suggests for us to do. Take on hold of the if you want to fill out one of each sheets.
I hate to do this.
Invest in any